What I'd like to do is just pass the mic around for a minute and just ask everybody here, what attracted you to this workshop? Why did you feel led to come to a workshop about resting in the arms of God? So if we could start with that, that would be great.
As a late arrival, I was just really moved by the title that you chose, which was Resting in the Arms of God. I think the Arantia book is incredibly deep intellectually, but there's another part which can be missed, which is the heart part, and I thought your title really captured that, and I wanted to hear more of your thinking and feeling about that.
I was asked to come as an to be an assistant to Andre. So far, I've not done very well by arriving late, and the CD player does not seem to be working. But I'm glad to be here, and it will be what we collectively make it.
I practice contemplative meditation, and resting in the arms of God is one of the ways that contemplative meditation is often described. And so I was interested in hearing what Andre had to say about resting in the arms of God and perhaps adding another prayer process to others that I have learned.
Well, the title intrigued me, Resting in the Arms of God, and I'm always looking for better ways to rest because of my harried life, and I've never had an opportunity to hear Andre present, and I look forward to getting to know you better this way.
My name's Darla, and the title as well lured me in because the divine rest is something that we all desire, and I think we all are looking forward to.
Well, Andre, you asked me to come, and I'm here to support you as your friend. And also, this is a very important topic to me, and I want to be part of it.
Cher Beasley, and I find that in my prayer life, often I'm communicating with the Father in different ways and about different subjects, and I don't quiet down very often, and I know that that's part of the process, and I'm ready to start doing a little bit of rest with our dear, sweet Father who loves us so much.
I'm Phil Calabrese. And I thought this would be a spiritual workshop rather than an intellectual exercise. And that's about it. Reason.
I feel an inward pull to know more about the Heavenly Father, and I feel like that's what you're going to help us to understand a little more of, and as you go over parts of the book, and so that's why I'm here.
Like others have mentioned before, it was the title that caught my attention. I am a person who does have a meditative, contemplative side that I don't often pay enough attention to. So I thought this would be an opportunity for me to have some stillness and quiet in the writing and be with other people who cared about the same thing.
It's Barry Clark. You know, likewise, I like the title. I like the facilitator. And I went to a workshop about 20 years ago in Lake Forest that ended with a writing exercise. And it was especially moving. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, guys. Still having a hard time hearing people, so I'm going to need you to really speak up. It's just, unfortunately, the acoustics in this room are just not what they should be. But I'm going to share with you guys why I decided to do this workshop. It kind of started because I got into an argument with some of the Arantia book readers, which is something I do pretty frequently, and some readers I know online. And we're talking about the whole phrase, you know, be you perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And of course, I realize that that's our destiny, and that's the purpose of the Ascension Scheme. But I was telling somebody that I thought the whole idea of striving for perfection in this life was kind of ridiculous. I mean, it's kind of like telling a little baby to become a grown-up, you know, right now. And so I basically said that I told them I did not strive for perfection. I said that I strive for things that I know I can achieve, like integrity, love, authenticity, you know, kindness, things. But you know, perfection is so foreign, I believe, to our existence right now that I just thought that, you know, it was kind of a ridiculous goal. I mean, you know, to me, it just didn't make sense. And I said I thought it was inappropriate to strive for that right now. I'd rather strive for something I know I can achieve. And so we need to strive for things, I believe, that are appropriate to each stage of the ascension journey. And, oh my gosh, I got raked over the coals. I mean, people told me I was sinning. They told me that I was going to have to do remedial work on the mansion worlds because I didn't want to strive for perfection, you know. And so I just thought it was, and there was just such an obsession with what Christians call works righteousness with some of these people. They were just so, like this one woman was like, I just want to please my Father. And I said, don't you realize that God is already pleased with you? You know, and so I was trying to convey to them that, you know, that it's okay to just rest in God's arms. And I wanted to, and because I've had some very profound experiences in doing that, which I'm going to share with you for the first half of the workshop. First half of this workshop is going to be me telling my story. The second half is going to be you guys writing and sharing either what you've written or how you felt about what you wrote. So let me kind of go, I want to just share a couple of passages really quickly from the book. Let me get these. Oops. I'm sorry. Can you hold that for me for a second? That'd be great. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Okay. I'm in reading from the introduction right before section one, and it says, Urantia mortals can hardly hope to be perfect in the infinite sense, but it is entirely possible for human beings, starting out as they do on this planet, to attain the supernal and divine goal which the infinite God has set for mortal man. And when they do achieve this destiny, they will, in all that pertains to self-realization and mind attainment, be just as replete in their sphere of divine perfection as God himself is in his sphere of infinity and eternity. Now, why am I reading that sentence? This is a little bit of a digression, but it relates to what I was trying to convey to these people. The key word in this sentence is, and when they do achieve this destiny, okay? Because I was actually having people tell me that we can somehow become perfect in some sense here on earth. I mean, they really were telling me that. And I was like, you know, and it talks here about the sphere of divine perfection. Well, the sphere of divine perfection is obviously not Urantia. It is, you know, the spheres that we're going to inhabit as finaliters. So that was the initial motivation for doing this workshop, is because I felt like there was a real perfectionistic tendency among some, and this is not, by the way, something that's unique to Urantia recruiters. This is something I found among a lot of Christians as well. There are people who are just, you know, they think, I'm on this treadmill for Jesus. I gotta do more. I gotta do more. I gotta do more. And so I really wanted to convey to people that, you know, be you perfect is a gentle invitation. It's something, and a lot of it, you know, yeah, there's part of it has to do with our striving, but some of it also just has to do with God's grace. You know, he's piloting us along. You know, the next life we're going to get better brains, we're going to get better bodies, we're going to, you know, it's not just about all about our own efforts. There's also a great quote from Viktor Frankl that I just really love. It's in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, and he's talking about saints that were canonized by the Catholic Church. And he says, you know, they didn't become saints because they tried to become saints. That would make them perfectionists, not saints. And he says, you know, that they became saints because they loved God and loved their fellow man, and the rest was a byproduct. And so that was kind of what I was trying to get across as well. The other thing that I want to talk about, and this is really more directly related, is the importance and the ability that we have to just receive love from God. In fact, if someone could take my mic for a second again, I'd appreciate it, because I'm going to Here, I'll take the mic again. Actually, I can't find the exact passage, but there's a place in, it's in the section, The Love of God, which is in paper 2, and it talks about how love is a direct response, or to loving God is a direct response to being loved. And that's one of the things that I really want to stress here. There's a great verse that I really like in the Bible. It's in 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 and 4. And it says, "Praise be to the God of all comfort, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we can comfort others in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God." And one of the points I really want to make here is that we can't comfort other people until we ourselves have received comfort from God. And the analogy I like to use is, how does a baby learn to love? A baby doesn't learn to love by trying to love. You know, they don't sit there and say, "Well, I've got to, you know, try harder to love more." You know, they learn to love because they've received love from their parents. And if they come from a loving, healthy family, the parents bond with the child and talk to the child, and they naturally respond by loving the parents back. So in the same way, I believe the way we love God is not by striving and pushing ourselves so much to love God, but by allowing God to fill us up with His love, and then that love spills over onto other people. And so that's one of the main themes I want to bring out here. What I want to do is talk a little bit to you about my own experience with what we're talking about here, with resting in the arms of God. And I'm going to do something I normally don't do. In fact, I've never done this publicly at a Urantia conference before. I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about what it's like to be blind. And it's something that's kind of hard for me to talk about, but I'm going to do it because it has a lot to do with what I'm about to share and what we're about to experience here. There basically are two extreme ways to raise a blind child, okay? One of them is to raise them like they're not, like they can't do anything for themselves and do everything for them. Now that's obviously wrong, okay? And that's just wrong-headed. But the other way that is actually more common nowadays, unfortunately, is to raise a blind children, and this is probably true of a lot of handicapped children in general, or disabled children, is to raise them to feel like they can't ask anybody for help at all. And that's basically how I was raised. I mean, I literally believed, you know, the teachers that I had, and to some extent my parents, especially my father, you know, were absolutely dead set on making sure that I was independent. You know, which is a good goal to a certain degree, okay? You know, you want to make sure that a blind child is functional and they can take care of themselves. But, you know, I literally grew up believing that if anybody did anything for me, that was some kind of a crime. I literally believed, I mean, you have to be careful what you say to kids, because kids take everything very literally. And so I literally believed that if I asked anybody for help, that I was, you know, that was a terrible thing to do. That was something to be ashamed of. And so this really messed up my self-esteem for a long time. To the point, in fact, I didn't think about it for a long time. I used to not like to talk about my blindness at all with anybody, because there were just too many shame issues, and I just didn't want to talk about it, and I didn't want to think about it. So I buried a lot of my insecurities and inadequacies for years, until 2003. And what happened is I was talking to a girl that I had met, a lady actually I had met over a telephone dating service, who was a school teacher. And she was absolutely, at the time, head over heels in love with me. But she asked me a simple question one day. She said, "So, Andre, so what kind of things can you do around the house?" Like, she's like, you know, "Can you clean? Can you, you know, what can you do?" And that question scared me to death. And the reason it scared me is because I thought she was trying to test me to see if I was independent enough for her. And if I wasn't, I thought she was going to reject me. You have to understand, when I was a child, I had various teachers who wanted to expose blind children to different things like cooking and cleaning and doing laundry and that kind of stuff, which is great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm glad that I was exposed to those things. The problem was that I was made to feel like if I needed any assistance with any of these things, that I was going to fail in life, and that I was not going to, that, you know, I just wasn't going to succeed, and that, you know, I was not going to be accepted by people, you know, by any other people, and that, you know, if I couldn't fold clothes perfectly, I wasn't going to get a job. You know, that was basically, you know, the message that I internalized from it. Now, it didn't help that I had a father who was very verbally abusive. You know, that also really reinforced a lot of this stuff. What happened was, when she asked me that question, "What kind of things can you do around the house?" It scared me to death. It was like, I mean, it was like somebody kicking me in the groin. What happened was all these old wounds that I had, that I've been struggling with as a child, just started resurfacing. And I just got very inadequate. I just started feeling very insecure and very inadequate. And the fact is that as a blind person, there are certain things that are harder for me to do. And I'm not making excuses. It's just a fact. It's harder for me to do certain things, like it's hard for me to cut things, like cut a piece of steak, for example. And I could do it if I absolutely have to, but it's a real pain in the neck. It's hard for me to spread things with a knife, like butter or peanut butter. It's really, really difficult. And it's difficult, by the way, for most blind people, unless they lost their sight later in life. But if they were born blind, these kinds of things are like, they're fine motor skills. It's almost like doing surgery for a blind person. It's very difficult. It's hard for me to cut my toenails. You know, there are some things that are just hard for me to do. And I was really afraid to share those things and talk about those things because I thought it was my fault that I had a hard time with those things. I thought it was because I was being lazy and it was because I wasn't trying hard enough. And so, you know, I was really, what ended up happening is after this girl, this woman, you know, asked me that question, my relationship with her became very strained for a while, and I was really scared. I felt like I was really scared to open up to her. Now, eventually, she became sort of my safe person and the person that I could talk to about all this stuff, but it was really hard for me to open up to her initially. And I want to reiterate something, and it may sound strange, but the pressure that was put on me as a child to never ask for help was merciless. I mean, it was a kind of abuse. It was a kind of emotional abuse. And, I mean, it really... It was to the point, I mean, I remember when I would play this game when I was a kid, I wouldn't ask for help even if I needed it, and I would just wait for somebody else to help me if I really needed help, because I thought I wasn't supposed to ask for it. And that, by the way, is very common. There are a lot of blind people who are conditioned to do the very same thing. They'll walk, like if they're lost or something, they'll walk around for hours and hours, and they won't ask for help, because they've been told from a very early age, you better be independent. It's kind of like, you know how a lot of men don't like to ask for directions? It's like magnifying that, you know, by a million. Okay? So, another thing that I also felt I was also told as a child is I was told you better learn to cook. If you're not going to be independent unless you know how to cook. Now I have to tell you guys something. I think cooking's a lot of fun, but I feel more comfortable doing it with another person because I don't feel comfortable cooking over a hot stove if I can't see what I'm doing. You know, I don't want to burn myself. And in fact I it's funny because I remember being at a summer program for blind children and we were making donut holes, and you know, you have to drop them in hot grease. And and I actually did get splattered with grease, and I got burned. And what bothered me is not that I got burned. What bothered me was the teacher's reaction to it. She's like, "You're okay. Nothing happened," you know. And they didn't do anything about it. The other thing was, I remember when I was another example of what I'm talking about, how extreme this all was. When I was in second grade, I was walking around. I was at recess actually, at recess time, and the snow was on the ground. And the principal told my friends, "You can't help Andre. He's got to learn to walk by himself." Well, that's great, except that I didn't know how to use a cane yet. There was snow on the ground, and I actually almost ended up in the street, and somebody had to come rescue me. And you know, basically what they did is they left me unsupervised. Now, why would you leave a sighted child unsupervised? Well, you know, that's, again, it was all done in the name of pushing independence. And the reason I'm telling you all this stuff is I'm just trying to convey to you how difficult this was for me. I actually went through a kind of 18-month depression, basically. And it wasn't an obvious depression to people who knew me. Well, I mean, people who knew me knew I was upset, but, like, I was still functional. I mean, I worked and stuff, but I was just not myself. And I ended up going to see a Christian counselor and going to therapy. And I ended up getting very, very close to God, which is what I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. I'm going to read to you some prayer journals that I did during that time, because it was, there was a time when only the Lord could comfort me. There was a time when all the support I could get from other people just wasn't enough. And one of the big mistakes I made, by the way, is I tried going to other blind people for support on the internet because I thought that they would be able to relate to what I was talking about. Boy, was that a mistake, because a lot of blind people were brought up the same way I was, except they never questioned it. So, you know, they would say things to me like, well, you know, you're just not independent enough. You know, you just have... And I remember, and going back to the cooking issue, by the way, I would talk to these blind people who said that they cooked over a hot stove. One guy told me he taught himself how to use a gas stove. The problem is that a lot of these people, when you really started talking to them, they admitted certain things that they wouldn't admit up front. Like, they told me that they burned their fingers all the time. Well, I'm sorry, but you know, I read Braille. It's not something I really want to do. And you know, they said that was the only way they could tell when something was done is by touching it. Well, you know, that's not a risk I wanted to take, and I didn't feel comfortable doing that. And you know, I was also never told that it was okay for me to look out for my own safety. You know, another example, I was taught how to cross busy streets with a cane by going with the traffic beside me instead of the traffic in front of me. Okay, well, and that's fine, that's understandable, but I'll be honest with you guys, I mean, I do use a cane when I'm by myself, and I take buses and trains and airplanes and fly around the country and do all of things, but I don't feel comfortable crossing busy streets alone these days, and for a couple of reasons. One is because I don't feel comfortable depending only on my ears, you know, especially now that I have hearing aids, but even if my hearing was perfect, you know, I don't feel comfortable depending only on my ears in that situation. You know, if I had to, I had to eventually get to a place where I said to myself, you know what, you know, screw all this stuff about, you know, there are times when, you know, I have a right to look out for my own safety. And nobody ever told me, nobody ever gave me permission to do that. It's like I had to figure that out for myself. And, you know, I heard some really odd things from blind people. I mean, there was one girl who told me, she said, you know, well, my parents made sure that I was independent. They made me cook on a stove and I got burned and I got hurt and all this stuff. But then after treating the wounds, my mom showed me what to do differently. Well, that's nice, except that I don't really want to go through that. You know, so it was, I did not get the affirmation and validation that I really needed and wanted from other blind people. The good news is that that brought me into relying on God. And what I want to share with you is a technique that that we're going to practice here. And it's something that I actually, it's not original to me. It's a technique that I, that has been demonstrated and taught by other people. It's called listening prayer. And essentially what I did is I started writing prayers in my journal, and I would write letters to God, and then I would just listen to what I hear God saying back to me and write it down. Okay? And so I want to read you some of the journals that I was writing during that time, okay, to show you just how intimate my relationship with God really became, and how God said things to me that I needed to hear that I couldn't hear other people, it wasn't enough for me to get them from other people. I needed to get these things directly from the Father. And the reason I'm talking, and to me this was resting in the arms of God, because I was going to God for comfort. I was going to God for comfort that I wasn't getting from other people. And so, I guess, and before I share that stuff, also point out, I'm going to read you a journal entry, and in the journal entry, I talk about a place called the National Federation of the Blind. And just so you know, the National Federation of the Blind are like militant blind Nazis. They're like people who think that you shouldn't cross a six-corner intersection. You should cross a six-corner intersection without assistance. You know, I mean, they're just really bizarre. And you know, they want blind people to like use power saws and stuff like that. You know, they're just very odd. And anyway, so I happened to mention them in this journal. So here's an example of a journal entry that I did in 2003. This is probably the one that I think is the most probably heartfelt and really just the one that that really was most meaningful to me. And here's what I said: Dear God, this is the last day of my fast, and I haven't done the praying that I said I was going to do. I feel like I haven't lived up to my end of the bargain. What does that mean? Does it mean that you're really not as high a priority in my life as I claim you are? Are you upset with me, disappointed in me? Well, it sure seems like it sometimes. Actually, you guys, hold on. Could someone, if you could hold this mic for me while I read, it's actually a lot easier. Okay. Here, just, if you could, okay. All right, let me start over here because I'm going to, okay. It says, Dear God, this is the last day of my fast, and I haven't done the praying that I said I was going to do. I feel like I haven't lived up to my end of the bargain. What does that mean? Does it mean that you're really not as high a priority in my life as I claim you are? Are you upset with me? Disappointed in me? Well, it sure seems like it sometimes. Lord, this has been, without a doubt, the most painful year of my life. Why did all this have to happen? Why did you have to bring all these things to the surface, all these deep wounds that hurt like hell? All I can think of are these voices from my past, and now my recent present, telling me that I'm not good enough, that I'm not independent, that I could be doing more, etc. So why am I being bombarded with those voices? I just had another one come up, telling me that I should spend a year at the National Federation of the Blind's training center. The thought of doing that makes me sick to my stomach, but I feel like I'm supposed to. Lord, one thing I found very disappointing is that so many blind people are not giving me the support I need. When I share my struggles with them, instead of getting empathy, I often get judgment, pressure, or what is intended as encouragement, but just makes me feel inadequate. I feel so inadequate compared to other blind people. Other blind people cook, do laundry, fix computers, etc. Cutting meat is hard for me. Spreading butter is extremely difficult. And sometimes, pouring things can be hard. Is that because I wasn't taught these things properly, or does my blindness make them more difficult? I suspect the answer is a little bit of both. I suppose if I had been taught these skills on a daily basis since childhood, I might be a lot better at them. But I was exposed to the tasks, and they were still harder for me. I spent 2 years trying to sign my name, and I can still barely do it, which is why I use an ink stamp. Again, Lord, why did you allow these things to come up? Why am I going through all this pain? And here's what I felt God say back to me. My dear sweet little boy, I never get tired of telling you how much I love you. I am not the person you think I am. No, it's not just your imagination. I really do adore you and delight in you. Andre, these voices are plaguing you because you're listening to them instead of me. The more time you spend focusing on these people from your past and present and all their expectations of you, the less time you spend communing with me. You're allowing these voices to fill your thoughts instead of allowing me and my love and grace to reign in your life. It's a kind of idolatry. You've said it before, but I'll say it for you. Who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe these blind people and the professionals who work with them? Or are you going to believe me? I'm saying this not to confront you, but because I feel for you. I feel deep compassion for you. I hate to see you struggling like this, but let me answer your question. I allow these insecurities to come up to the surface because they've always been there, in the back of your mind. You just haven't been acknowledging them. I've told you before, but I'll tell you again. These things you worry about are not so important. I want you to face these things once and for all, just so you can see that they're not a big deal. But you're making a big deal out of them because people in your childhood made a big deal out of them. In a way, I'm bringing these things to the surface not because I think you need to deal with them, but because you don't really need to deal with them. If it helps you to get together with Michael B. and practice some of these skills, if that helps you heal, go for it, but don't push yourself. Andre, let me close with 2 points. First, trust yourself. You know where your strengths are and what your abilities are. If you don't feel comfortable doing something, don't do it. Sometimes it's hard for you to see yourself accurately, but you're not a lazy person. Far from it. If something is really important to you, you'll take the time to learn it. Look at what you did with your computer. Your dad actually said something very wise to you. He said you're going to have to set your own standards. And let me share something. I can't read what I wrote here. Let me say something to you. It is hard being blind. The people who say it's easy are kidding themselves. Your life is hard enough as it is. There's nothing wrong with doing some things to make it easier. Don't ever do something out of a sense of obligation. You have heard my voice. It is not the voice of duty or obligation. My voice calls you with excitement, desire, and the promise of adventure. Trust that voice. I will never lead you astray. So that's an example of what I'm talking about. I was able to talk to God about anything in that particular situation. I was telling God that cutting meat was hard for me. And by the way, I should tell you that I found out that a lot of these blind people lie. That's one of the things I found out later. Someone actually told me that. He said because there's so much pressure on them, you know, to feel like they are supposed to be able to be these super people that they won't tell you the full truth about certain things until you really start talking to them. But one of the things, just a couple of things I guess that I want to just point out here is, again, God comforted me in a way that nobody else could do. I mean, there was a time, and I remember telling a friend of mine, I said, there's a time when only the Lord can comfort you. All the encouragement I tried to get from other people just wasn't working. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, is that I think sometimes when we pray, we think we're supposed to pray these spiritual prayers. You know, like, I've got to pray for things that are really important and really valuable, you know. But there's nothing wrong with praying. I mean, there's nothing that's petty to God. You know, and I think it's important for us to remember that we're basically just, like, barely out of the womb spiritually, if that at all. And so, you know, just like a good parent is not going to tell a baby that, you know, that their needs aren't important, when I was praying to God about how, you know, I feel ashamed or inadequate because it's hard for me to cut meat, that's okay. That's important to God. And, you know, remember again what the Your Answer Book says. It talks about sharing your inner life with God. And to me, I take that very literally. That means that, you know, I can share anything. If I'm having violent thoughts about somebody, I'm going to share them with God. If I'm having, you know, if I'm feeling depressed about this or that, I'm going to share it. And, you know, that means if I want to swear in my prayers, I'll swear. If I want to, you know, so to me, the important thing is to be completely authentic and to be completely transparent with God, because he sees us, you know, he sees all that anyway. In fact, you know, it's interesting because I talk about comfort, because the Urantia book says that, you know, we're basically naked before God. And it says that should be a comfort to the human being. So that's kind of basically my story and why this topic is so important to me. How are we doing on time? What are we? What time do we have? 2:45. Okay. What I'd like to do is take the next 15 minutes before we start writing. I'd take the next 15 minutes and just call for some responses to what I've just shared, if anybody wants to you know, respond.
It's Francel, Andre. It's delightful and heartwarming and... Yes, it's delightful and heartwarming and sorrowful to hear what you went through as a child, and thank you for sharing that. I think we all have our own stories, and I think those are the stories that God works with. Those very specific things are what it is that God transforms and heals into his image on the way to becoming perfect. So I just wanted to thank you for sharing that.
This is a handheld. Okay, this is Cheryl. I think that in order for any of us to know God, even though, yes, God does indwell our mind, but we're usually totally unconscious of it, but in order for us to know God, it's a relationship, just like any other relationship. If you want to know someone and have them... Well, God does know us, but if you want to know someone, you have to spend time with them. And I was always so moved in the Urantia book, in the Adjuster Papers, about sharing the inner life with God. And I also took it literally. And to me, that also means that anything I'm thinking, and I'm going to be thinking anyway, it's going on all the time, if I would just be directing those thoughts to God, could be the exact same thoughts, could be the exact same, you know, low down, not so spiritual thoughts, like, oh, I'm so pissed off at that person, or I feel so annoyed at, you know, some of the shit going on. I know this is being recorded, but, well, what can I say? If I would just be sharing that with God, just including him in, he knows what's going on in my mind anyway, but if I'm not thinking of him, directing it to him, saying it to him as I would say it to my very best friend in the whole world, or the person who to whom I can say absolutely anything, if I'm doing that, I'm sharing the inner life with God. And, you know, what the book says, which is also so mind-blowing, is that when we do that, we are... doing God's will. That's pretty big. It's also pretty easy. We're thinking anyway. But what it does, the one thing it does require, though, is that we get into the habit of remembering to include God, to just direct God sort of as a little, so like, you know, when you're writing something, you can like stick in a word and put a little caret underneath, editing it. You know, thoughts are going on anyway, but first it's like, Father, you know, whatever it is. And that's a great thing to do, because when you do that, you know, and you start from wherever you are, whatever you're thinking anyway, just direct it to God. Makes a big difference. But the other thing about the writing is a great thing, and writing is also a well-recognized therapeutic tool. Almost every therapist recognizes that writing is one of the best things anyone can ever do, personal writing. And when you're doing personal writing, and I do it every day, and I write to God every day because that's the best way to do it, I think, I'm just writing what I would write anyway. Whatever comes into my mind, I don't think about it, I just write it. Sometimes it's, you know, quite sublime. Other times it's not sublime at all. But I guess I'm lucky that I never thought that I needed to be very holy about it, so I would just say whatever I would say. But one of the things about writing is that supposedly it connects the right and left side of the brain. And things may come out when you're writing that you may not even realize are going to come out. It's almost like you're saying to your mind, okay, whatever it is you need to express, get it out. And it just is, it's helpful to a person in so many different ways.
This is Phil. I was touched by your account. I thought that was very helpful. I think most people lie about their skills. A couple of examples come to mind. All these fake degrees and, you know, it's fish stories, right? I'm not suggesting that most of us do, but I think there's a lot of that kind of thing. Embellishing. Another thing that came to mind was your distinction between striving and being in the arms of God. And I think being in the arms of God is one way to put what worship is supposed to be, what communion is supposed to be, sharing the inner life with God. And it's supposed to be a time when we put down the striving. And we strive, you got plenty of time for striving, but when we're in that kind of a mode, I think that's when the striving ought to be put aside. And with respect to sharing the inner life with God, it isn't so easy. If you think about maintaining a constant void of offense, sometimes I may not want to be thinking about God, and that's probably because I'm thinking about the wrong thing. So that's got more power, potency, than maybe we can give it credit for. Sharing the inner life, having a constant void of offense, will change us.
Perhaps we should try to share the mic so that all of it is recorded and I can pass it back to you afterwards. I'd be glad to do that. This is Linda, and I want to thank Andre for telling your story. It's very, very powerful, and it's moving, and it's authentic vulnerability to tell your story. One of the reasons that your recount is emotionally connecting for other people is we all have issues around shame. The word shame certainly was something that I identified with. And maybe one of the ways in which we are to become more like God, not necessarily perfect, but more like God, is to know how to let go of the shame and learn to love. And that includes learning loving ourselves before we can love other people. And my sense of perfection is, as Jesus said, you will do far greater things than I did, which is not changing water into wine, I assure you. But it is perhaps that ability to learn to love other people. And I take great comfort from that simple reminder that if we just learn to love one more person every day, we're on the path.
And I think it was really moving what you were saying, because I think there's a real universality about your experience of growing up with hearing a lot of things from your parents that may have been helpful to make you as strong, as independent as they were, but at the same time became way too limited a world map to navigate life. And so I think it's universal, but what you have is way complicated by being blind and all that brings with it. But there's something, someone actually has on the table a book by a monk named Thomas Keating. And in it he talks about how when we're really young, we have very few options except to go along with our parents. And I think being blind, it must have been especially so for you that you had extremely few options. And if they forced you to be independent, that was it. I mean, you didn't really have an option when you were younger. And so that kind of comes back to haunt you for a long, long time. And what Thomas Keating talks about is something that you mentioned, that if you get to a point where you can't rely on other people who are blind, you can't rely on the advice and script and, you know, wisdom in quotes from your parents. And he talks about getting to a point where all you have to rely on is God. And it's not really a fun point to get there, but it is a point of wonderful growth.
We have about 5 minutes left before I want to get to our writing exercise. But before, so I want to let some other people jump in just for a couple more things to say. But I wanted to just interject a couple things. I wanted to just piggyback on what Cheryl was saying when she was talking about how when you write, there are things that happen when you write that that things come out that you didn't even realize were going to come out. And that's exactly what's happened. I mean, what's happened with me is when I pray and I write and I do what I just did, which is, you know, what I share with you, I wrote a letter to God and then listened to what I heard God say back to me. The writing became the mechanism through which I heard God speak. Okay, so the writing became like a receiver. You know what I mean? And in fact, I actually had a teacher who told me once in high school, this was not relating to prayer, they were just talking about writing. He was saying that a lot of people think that when you write, you're just writing down the thoughts you have in your head. Okay? He said, no, that's not true. He said that actually when you write, it enables you to think at a higher level than you would ordinarily. And that's why, this is kind of a whole other digression, but that's why I'm a little worried about people using voice commands, you know, all the time on their computers, because I just think there's something to be said for writing, whether it's with a pencil or a keyboard, or in my case, sometimes a brailler, which is this thing with six keys, which I didn't bring with me because it's clunky and it makes a lot of noise. But, you know, the point I was making those is that, you know, when I was writing, when I was doing those prayer journals, I felt God say things to me that I really needed to hear. I mean, like one of the most important lines that I really enunciated was when God said, I am not the person you think I am. That was really, really important for me to hear because, you know, for so many of us, we have these voices in our heads, you know, that tell us, that voices of condemnation or self-criticism or whatever. And it's very easy to confuse those voices with God's voice. But when you're actually spending time and just listening to what God says, you know, God said things to me that I would never have said to myself. I never would have been that gentle with myself. I never would have been that kind to myself. So that's the other thing. And I guess the other thing I wanted to say was, it's not that I don't think that being independent is important. What I really wish is I wish that, you know, that these people had taught me to be interdependent, which is my favorite word in the English language. You know, the things I can do for you and things you can do for me. It doesn't have to be all about me being dependent or about being all independent. But anyway, why don't we hear from just one or two more people here?
It's Francil again. Just a thought from Cheryl's talking about sharing the inner life with God. I loved your description of what you talked about, and especially in doing it through writing, I've found that being a self-revelatory process. And what you're about to do in terms of, well, I don't know what you're about to do. I'll say what I have experienced in sitting in silence. The process, any kind of contemplative, meditative process, if practiced over a period of time in a devoted way, will result in the unloading of the unconscious. Simple fact. Will result. And to me, that is another entirely huge and profound way that we are invited to share the inner life, the truly, we're talking very deep inner life with God, is when we sit in silence, after a period of time, if we do it devotedly, things will rise from the subconscious that have been locked up by defense mechanisms. They will be released. And eventually those things come to consciousness. And because they come to consciousness, they get acknowledged and they get released. When they are released in the presence of knowing that you are sitting silently with God, they're being released and received in a safe way. And to me, that's another really deep and even more profound way of sharing the inner life with God.
Why don't we go ahead and I'm going to go ahead. Okay, we're going to, thank you, Francelyn. I want to talk to you about that later because I have some definite opinions about that. It's not really, it's an interesting discussion, but I don't want to get into it right now about the silence issue, but I definitely want to talk to you about it another time. What we're going to do now is we're going to do, and by the way, is Ken still here?
Yes.
Okay, Ken. What we're going to do is we're going to do a writing exercise where I'm going to have you guys do what I did for about half an hour, where you write a short letter to God, and then just listen to what you feel you hear God saying, and write it down. So we're going to, you know, and by the way, this is something that Bill and Kay Cooper used to teach. They did a workshop they called Seeing Yourself Through God's Eyes, which is basically the same thing that I'm talking about. So we're going to practice some listening prayer. I decided not to bring my Brailler because it's just too noisy, so I'm going to let you guys do this. When we do that, I want to play a song for you guys. It's by Twyla Paris, who's a Christian artist. It's called The Warrior is a Child. And I want to just recite a couple of one of the verses for you, and we can play that song while you start writing. It'll be kind of an introductory thing that kind of gets set the mood for you. One of the verses, I think it's the second verse. It goes like this: I'm afraid because his armor is the best, but even soldiers need a quiet place to rest. People say that I'm amazing, never face retreat. But they don't see the enemies that lay me at his feet. And then she says, they don't know that I go running home when I fall down. They don't know who picks me up when no one is around. I drop my sword and cry for just a while. Because deep inside this armor, the warrior is a child. And that's fundamentally what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about, you know, that to me this is part of being like a little child, is allowing yourself to just rest in God's arms, allowing him to talk to you, allowing him to comfort you. The other thing I want to just kind of remind you guys of is when you write, don't worry if you get distracted. This is one of the things that I used to feel really guilty about. When I would pray, I'd feel guilty because I got distracted and I started thinking about, you know, sex, or I started thinking about, some rock and roll song that I like or something. And now what I do when that happens, this is what I really would encourage you to try. Instead of trying to focus back on what you're, you know, on something supposedly more spiritual, just share that. Just share that with the Lord. Okay? So let's say you're writing in your journal and you're writing your letter to God and you all of a sudden think about the brownie you just had for dessert. Just tell God, you know what, that was a great brownie. I'm really glad that you created, the people who made that brownie or whatever. So just, I would encourage you to just try to just go with that instead of trying to resist those things. Just try to, just let yourself, you know, go with whatever you're thinking. And even if you're in the midst of the receiving part where you're receiving from God and your mind wanders, you know, I know that, you know, God knows that I'm thinking anyway. I know that God enjoys what I enjoy. So if I start thinking about the brownie I had for dessert, you know, then God will say, you know, to me, I know you really like that brownie. I'm glad you enjoyed it, you know. So just again, as I said, just try to be, if what I would do is just, you know, be as, just kind of yield, just kind of, you know, relax and let this flow through you. Now we're going to play this one song. If you want, we can continue to play the CD throughout the session, the writing session, or, because there's some good music on it. Or if you want, we can just play the one song and then go on and then just turn it off. So it's just up to you guys what you want to do. But I do want you to hear this one song. So while we set the scene for that, for the writing, while you guys start, get your pen and paper out and stuff, we'll play this song. Okay. Yeah, why don't we just, it'll be up to you guys whether you want to, I don't know if you guys have a preference as far as whether you want music on the whole time or just the beginning. So whatever you guys want to do is fine. Oh, okay, that's entirely up to you. We are going to have some sharing time, but nobody's going to, I'm not going to force anybody to share anything. What I want to do is, when we share, you can either share what you've written or share how it made you feel. It doesn't have to, it could be either one. But again, nobody's being forced to share anything. So if you want to pass, that's fine. What I want to do is just have you guys share either whatever you're comfortable sharing, either share pieces of what you wrote or share how it made you feel. Some of you may have never done this before, so you know, it'd be great to get a kind of a first time experience perspective. Even if you have done it before, you know, just kind of share how it made you feel, or share some of what you wrote. Just depends on what you feel comfortable with. No one has to share. Anybody wants to pass can pass. So why don't we go ahead and start doing that?
Mine was a difficult note, you know, about some very personal things. And I've done this once before, as I mentioned at the outset. And, you know, ultimately, it was a very valuable experience. But it was difficult once I flipped over into, you know, the father's response mode. And there was nothing at first. And it was very interesting getting through that block. And so I just started, you know, at some point. And, you know, it unfolded in a very, very constructive way. So, you know, it was ultimately very valuable and gave me some new insights and new things to think about.
I have been fortunate enough to do this a number of times before, and it was just a joy to have the time and the quiet to really write. It was too of a personal nature, but very hopeful, and I look forward to seeing what the next few months brings.
It's was really interesting just thinking about issues that are, you know, the pressing issues, I think, for me or for any of us, are the issues that are really hard for us and really stump us. And just one of those things that as I was doing this, having that feeling of just a very slight little twist to what it was I was struggling with, a twist from God's perspective, making it much easier, much more manageable, not seeming anywhere near as overwhelming.
This was difficult because I wanted to make it personal, but then again, I was thinking I might want to share something. So it's been a little of both, I guess. My prayer was about love, and I found myself ending it with a quote that I often repeat, and I will give you a new heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and you will belong to my people, and I will be your God. So then when I listen for a response, and then wrote it down here somewhere. It said, "You are loved, Phil, more than you know. You felt love that day when I manifested myself to you in answer to your question, 'What is my connection to God?' You have felt my love many times since then. And you will more and more feel my love in the days ahead as you bring that feeling to your fellows. Love is contagious, and my love will not fail to transform you into a love-filled personality. Be still and feel my love."
This is about love as well, and I thought I might quickly read it because it might have meaning to others. O Father, first creator, first to love, our teacher, teaching us through the hard-earned method of experience, which in turn generates empathy, understanding, wisdom, humility, and forgiveness. I want to love like you love, seeing faults only as coming lessons that will magnify the fruits of the Spirit. I want to understand the love that transcends brutality and barbarism through seeing the essence of each soul that will one day break the binders of ignorance. That's how I want to love. I want to nurture and encourage the beautiful essence you know in all of us. I want to be a participant in the virus of love that is infectious and uplifting. Dear, dear Cher, baby girl of mine, you have already begun the journey with your desire. Your love list grows as it must. When you encourage someone, when you nurture their talents, when you inspire hope, when you console, these are the acts of loving. Caring, praying for others, thoughtfulness, those are all the outworkings of love. Yes, my dear Sherry, you are a participant in this never-ending voyage of love that gets bigger, deeper, fuller, beyond imagination. Love, the final conqueror of all diversity in all the universe.
Well, I love doing this. I've been doing this pretty much 99% of the time for the past 3 years. And I just love to do it, some days more than others. But it was very nice just now to have the time in this conference to sit and do it. And I've really been so grateful the past couple of years that I started doing this because it's doable. And I like finding things that I can do and that anyone can do that are doable no matter what, no matter what kind of a mood I might be in or how tired I might be or whatever, or how unspiritual I might feel, that I can actually do and that other people can do and that will bring me closer to God. And I know it brings me closer to God, maybe not every day that I've done it, but I know, having been doing this for a couple of years now, I know that it has, because I can see the progress that I've been making in my own life since I started doing it that I wasn't making before I started doing it. And I was frustrated by that lack of progress. I don't always write back from God. Sometimes I do, but not always. I always do write to God because that's so easy to do, no matter how I'm feeling. And I want to just add also that it's so important that there be things we can do no matter what, no matter what kind of minds we have, that are practices that will, over time, bring us closer to God. I'm a failed meditator. I want to say this publicly. It's not very politically correct, but I am going to say it. In the 60s, I started trying to meditate, sitting silently and trying to empty my mind. Didn't succeed then. Didn't succeed years later. Didn't succeed with the contemplative prayer, which I tried doing for 9 months, 20 minutes a day, regularly, and it made me feel like a failure. And it made me feel like maybe I wasn't such a spiritual person because I couldn't do that. I couldn't empty my mind. My mind was always, you know, going. And when I found that I could do this, that I could write to God every day just from where I am, wherever that is, it might be a good place, it might be a terrible place. I mean, I could be having the most unspiritual thoughts, you know, pissed off at the whole world, and share it with God, and it was okay, because God loves us no matter what. But by doing that, God would help me move forward. Maybe not that day, but shortly thereafter. So I just want to share that with everybody, because this is something any of us can do, because I feel like if I could do it, anybody can do it, because I'm not so special in that way. All it takes is the commitment to do it.
Thank you for sharing that. That was great. I'll read mine. Dearest Father in me, forgive me my unworthiness, my self-pride, and help me change my priorities to all light and eternal life. I trust you to keep safe those values and thoughts that you deem keepable and eternal. I trust you to love all I have loved and remember whom I have loved. Help me ascend to the mansion worlds on high and not to sleep a long time. I'm so tired and long for the divine rest. Love me, myself, and I. Dear child, your efforts are worthy. You stress too much. Learn what you need to follow the paths I set before you. Surrender all in trust of survival. I know your pain. I know what others have done to you. Remember, though, it's all for you. What I have done is all for you. I will not remember your sins. Love, I am that I am.
Well, thank you all for sharing. I always find this an interesting exercise because it's so hard for me to sit and write. And Sherry, was it you that gave a presentation on prayer journal? Is that where I got my prayer journal from? Cheryl. Yes. And so this reminded me of that. So I sat here struggling to write something to God and apologizing, as always, for my weaknesses. And he spoke to me, and I mentioned to him how it must pain him, my continual struggles to communicate with him. And I thought of my son and how he struggles to communicate, how we struggle to communicate. And the response from God was to open my heart and then open my mouth and to be an example unto my son and to test him as God tests me, and in that way I can help him and help myself. And so I appreciate this exercise, Andre. I appreciate the prayer journal, and I will continue to struggle to communicate with God through writing and prayer and meditation.
This is a process that I'm familiar with. I've journaled for many years. And I often find more recently that I just find myself being thankful. So that's a lot of what I did here. Dear God, Father, Mother, Lover, one who knows me better than I know myself, your blessings surround me. Your love envelops me like a comforting blanket. Your whisper is so close to me that I can't tell who it comes from, me or you through me. Life is such a blessing. Your gifts of love are unfolding, spreading into and through my life. Sometimes I don't feel them. Sometimes I do. But the comfort that you are never away from my side is what keeps me from believing that I am alone. The fact that even when I experience a sense of void, yet your hand touches me, yet I am within the grasp of your ever-potent and charged affection. Thank you. My resting in you continues to be a combined process of prayer and dreaming, material that I do and do not control. What of it is any of your intent, I don't understand, but I do know that somehow through the process there is a continuing bond being forged. Thank you. And a response, such as it was, Francel, take your time. Don't be in a hurry to grow or to go anywhere. Let me catch up with you and walk beside you. My love, my strength, my peace, and my rest are yours at all times.
This is Ken. I resonated a lot with what Karen described. The challenges of the process and that. But prior to this conference, when I learned what the theme of the conference was, I did a little study of the use of the word conscious in the Urantia book. And I stumbled across the fact that the word conscious and the several derivations of that word are used 13 times in the same paragraph with the word assurance, that consciousness of God comes hand in hand with assurance. And maybe in some instances I try to think that maybe the assurance comes before the consciousness, that I have a faith, I have a trust in this loving, progressive plan that's out there. So I hold an assurance that it's workable and going to work for me. And from that, then I still struggle with the application, the consciousness of bringing it to the forefront. So my writing was minuscule. My thoughts were multitude. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share with you. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Hold on a second. Okay. What I'd like to do shortly in just 2 minutes is just have some prayer time. We'll pass the mic around again, and just people want to pray, they can pray. If they want to just be silent, they can be silent. And then what we'll do is at some point I'll just take the mic back and close in prayer. What I wanted to share with you guys one thing that I think you guys would really appreciate, which is, and by the way, I should tell you the reason I haven't responded sometimes to things you're saying is because, unfortunately, it's not your fault. It's this, the acoustics in this room again are just really not what they should be. So I couldn't hear everybody all the time. The good news is I'll have a recording of this. I'll be able to play it back. What I wanted to say, though, was that, and this I think you guys will really appreciate, the other thing that was really important about me doing this kind of prayer, this listening prayer, and maybe I could have titled this workshop differently. Maybe I could have titled it Sharing Your Inner Life with God, because it's not just about rest. It's about that very thing. It's about being authentic, being transparent with God. That's really what I'm trying to describe here. But what I was going to say was that, that when I was doing that, some of you may know that I rejected the Urantia book for about 10 years and was a fundamentalist Christian. And I was actually a fundamentalist Christian at the time I wrote those journals. I was not a Urantia book reader. I was not reading the book at the time. But the interesting thing was that once I decided to get back into the Urantia book a few years ago, one of the things that influenced me was that I realized, you know, I couldn't believe in this wrathful, vengeful God anymore. You know, I couldn't believe this God who was half love and half wrath, you know, or vengeance, because that wasn't the God that I tasted and knew, and you know, that wasn't the God that spoke words of comfort to me in the midst of all this agony. That, you know, that God couldn't be wrathful or vengeful or angry. That just wouldn't, and I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have been able to trust a God like that, you know, that was loving to you one day and stabs you in the back the next day. You know, I don't think I could do that. So that was just a real important thing for me, that, you know, there's nothing like going to the source. You know, there's nothing like actually spending time with the Father and knowing who he really is, so you don't just rely on secondhand information. Once you've had that experience, you know, that's really a transforming experience, because there's no turning back after that. So that's just something I wanted to bring up. I'd like us to go ahead and spend some time in some spoken word prayer, some silent prayer, whatever it is you want to do. We'll pass the mic around again, and then when it gets to be around closing time, so I can give you the mic back, and I'll close with a prayer. So why don't we do that?
Blessing God, thank you for this time together, for the different vision that you give to each of us of you in our relationship with you, and for the wonder of being transformed into the image of you that you hold for each one of us.
Dear Lord, I want to thank you for this time together with everybody, and hope that I've planted some seeds, and hope that and pray that this has been helpful for people. So, Lord, I want to thank you that this has been recorded. I want to thank you that other people will be able to hear it. And, Lord, I want to thank you that that prayer is not just a monologue, that it can be a two-way conversation. And, Lord, I want to thank you that you're available to us always. And I want to just reiterate and echo the prayer about Michael, who I just go ahead and call Jesus. Lord, Jesus, I want to thank you that you are our most direct and personal approach to the Father. You are personal. You're not pre-personal. You're there. You're concrete. And at one time you were even here so we could touch you. And Lord, I just want to thank you for becoming man, for walking among us. I want to thank you that you understand, not just existentially, but by direct experience, what we go through. And Lord, I want to thank you for the privilege of sharing my inner life with you in all its beauty and ugliness, all my strengths, all my weaknesses. They're all yours. So I want to thank you again for this time. I want to thank you, as I've said before several times this weekend, I want to thank you that we've come to a place in the Urantia movement where we're not just in our heads all the time, where we can have this kind of workshop, and we can have this kind of intimate relationship with you, and where we can just share that with our brothers and sisters. And I thank you for all these things. Thank you for everybody who's been here. In Jesus' name, amen.